Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit michters.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, and it's basically the best radio station in the world because we get to sit around drinking whiskey with Heather Green, top-notch expert of whiskey, and she just came out with a book, Whiskey Distilled. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
And I don't want to distract you right
now.
Yes,
I'm doing something very important. Very important.
She's pouring some Balvenie 15. So that's awesome. Well, welcome to the new year. This is actually the first show of 2015. And I'm very glad to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
I've been
you
wanting
so
to get
much.
You in here for a while, and it's really great to have you. And cheers to that.
Cheers.
Boom.
It's a cold day. It's perfect for it's scotch. Perfect.
Yeah, snowy. Like lightly. You know what? This is actually the perfect kind of weather for drinking scotch. Just kind of like light drizzle of snow. Mm-hmm. It's not windy.
Not too windy.
Wind sucks. Wind's the worst part of like the cold weather.
Well, New York, it brings it from like 20 degrees to like negative 16 when the wind blows. Especially around the buildings, whipping around in Manhattan and stuff. You're just like, damn.
Yeah. Ah. Gah. Gross. Well, yeah, I'm really glad to have you on the show.
Thanks.
And I'm really glad that we have opportunity to talk about whiskey because like you said, it's time to start drinking more whiskey.
It's your thing.
Not just drinking whiskey. Like, so on that subject.
Right. It's time to drink more whiskey.
Yeah.
We just started. So the day is still
long.
We're
never not drinking whiskey, right?
Am I not ever drinking? Yeah, well, I sleep. So I don't drink it while I'm sleeping.
I usually have one of those Camelback like things and I just like have a, you know, like a rabbit with a,
It's a clever way to do it.
I just want to make sure that I'm a 24-hour man, you know?
Oh, goodness.
Well, this is real fun. But
let's talk about
the book and talk about whiskey. First of all, like, what got you into whiskey?
Well, a lot of good luck, first of all. I discovered it at an early age. I talk about it in my book, actually. My first real sip would have been at a time that I don't remember because my grandparents used to dip the binky in it. It's the way that you would kind of make a baby less cranky or use it for teething purposes. I don't remember that, but I do remember getting a Orange Crush bottle spiked with Jack Daniels when I was like 14. And I had heard from a friend that if you have alcohol on your breath and you grab a fistful of grass and shove it in your mouth, it takes away the taste of whiskey. So,
so why would you put a handful of grass in your mouth then?
That's what I did.
No, but why would you if it takes away the taste of whiskey?
Because I didn't want my parents to find out.
Oh.
That's the first story in the book. So essentially, because my book weaves kind of my personal experience. That was my first negative experience. So I was on the all fours in the front of my the front lawn and grabbing fistfuls of grass and tanking that.
There's also another one that's like it's like putting a penny under your tongue or something like that.
Oh, that's another myth I haven't heard of.
It's like a total like Southwest Southern thing.
Oh.
And it's really stupid. It's like really put a penny under
your
tongue.
To this day,
millions of people have touched.
To this day, grassy, herbaceous aromatics in wine and whiskeys are my favorite. Maybe it goes back to that.
Maybe, yeah.
it's a memory from high school.
Yeah, absolutely. So what got you into, you've been like the whiskey som and Flatiron Room and you've been doing a lot of like whiskey. So what got you to the point? Like, did you start in the service industry or did you just like study really hard?
Well, I did start in the service industry and yes, I studied really hard. There wasn't anybody in front of me really to sort of look up to, like, what does a whiskey expert do around? You know, it was definitely 10 years ago. There weren't a lot of people doing this. There were certainly people working in the industry, but it didn't have the same kind of popularity as it does now, for sure. I'm a musician, so I play keyboards and I sing, and I was traveling around the world, and as many musicians in New York City do, they have restaurant jobs, and I was at Union Square Cafe and the Red Cat and God knows a whole host of other things. Tonic, when it was one of my favorite places to work, was a music club on the Lower East Side, like a lot of jazz and avant-garde jazz, and, you know, I would just drink whiskey while I was...
As musicians do.
And then... the rest is history.
The last time I met up, I'm also a musician, and last time I had a jam session with someone who was drinking vodka tonics.
Was that a little disappointing?
I was like, eh, you're out of the band.
Yeah. Somehow that doesn't work. Being in a band and drinking vodka tonics, I can't even imagine. I mean, even just Frank Sinatra was drinking Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
He was drinking his own kind of... He had his own style, you know. But, I was traveling around. I was in Scotland, of course. That's where, you know, some would say is the spiritual homeland of whiskey, the grandfather of whiskey in Scotland. So I was there for 2 years, and I started working at the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, which is a private club for people who are massively into whiskey. It's just this dynamite venue that has – they basically collected casks from all over Scotland. There's about 107 different distilleries in Scotland right now. And at the time, the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, what they do is they collected these casks from these different distilleries, and they would bottle the whiskey themselves and call it, you know, the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society bottling of Macallan Distillery or Glenfiddich Distillery or Balvenie or Talisker, whatever the distillery is. And that's called an independent bottler. And they would do that, and they would... house them in this really beautiful Harry Potter-esque wet stone building that was like oak lined and flanked with big fireplaces. And I started working there, and you just cannot help but fall in love with whiskey after that.
So awesome.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And then I started in a strange twist of fate. There was a tasting panel, and they would get together these people that work at the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, mostly Scottish people. And they get together every once in a while and taste those casks and say, is this good enough to be bottled or not? And what do we call it? Meaning, like, how would you describe it? And they get really fun and creative with their tasting notes. And as I said, in a strange twist of fate, a musician had a gig. And they said, you want to do it, Heather? And I said, absolutely. So I sat on the panel, and that was just incredible. I just nosed and tasted the whiskeys in this amazing building in Scotland, and just started using words that I had learned in New York when I was working at places like Union Square Cafe, and had to know a lot about wine. So I just was like, I'll just use the same words. Like, oh, this is grassy. It tastes like my front lawn. Or things like that, or cherry or sherry influenced or whatever. And so, that was it. And then I fell in love. And, you know, there's a lot of synergies between, I think, music and the creation of something beautiful and wistful like whiskey.
You're preaching to the choir. I totally, I feel like we should high five right now.
Okay.
We're doing it. Bam. That was weak.
Wait, we missed. I have a trick for high fiving. I learned at the bar the other day.
Elbow.
You look at the elbow.
Yeah, you always do.
We didn't do that.
Always look at the elbow. But we also did, like, a left to right.
Also, I'm 5'2", and you're what?
Seven and a half.
Yeah, this is the problem. We have very mismatched arms.
So, okay. So, you know, to me, like, I don't know. I kind of, like, I got into whiskey, like, in a different, like...
Okay.
We all have our appreciative... like our appreciation of whiskey and like the way that we kind of got into it. Like, you know, like a lot of times on this show, we talk about like how people got into the service industry and like how people got to the grandiose level that they're at to be a guest on the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio. I'm kidding. I'm looking at Jack, but he's not having it. Sorry, Jack. To me, like, okay, so, like, what's your ideal, like, whiskey setting?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I know it changes, but, like...
It does change, that's right, it changes.
Like music.
Yeah, It's occasion. Whiskey is an occasion. I mean, it depends. You know, like, this is a super fun environment. I mean, this is a new one. We're in this studio that kind of makes me feel like I'm in a sauna or something. It's all wood encased in Brooklyn, and it's cold out. And, you know, drinking whiskey here is pretty fabulous. From now on, this might be my favorite environment.
You heard it here, folks.
Speakeasy at Roberta's in Brooklyn. Yeah. But of course, I mean, you know, when you, there's the whiskey cliche, which is you need to be in this, like,
fireplace and
the fireplace and the Chesterfield leather couch that you sink into and the sheepskin rugs and cigars. And, you know, that's, you know, certainly a cliche for drinking whiskey. And that is a nice place, but that's not realistic all the time. So, you know, sometimes you might be at a rock concert and you're like, you know, let me just have like your cheap whiskey, and you would just want to have it, you know, quick, cheap whiskey to drink while you're listening to music. And that's
Jim Beam Black. And that's
exactly,
like,
well, I don't name brand. I mean, you know, like the bar brands, which can be really great. My favorite, I have some favorite bar brands. You know, I look and scour and say, oh, that's the best one for me today. And, you know, then there's I love drinking whiskey at an airport bar. I mean, that's fabulous. I really enjoy that.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of drinking in the air.
I love it. Well, it gets you buzzed a little bit quicker. You got to be careful.
There's something that like goes back to those like those days of like the like Pan Am flights in the 1960s or something about like, you know, I always wear a suit when I go on flight.
I'm so glad to hear that. I try to dress really nice on a flight. I mean, I'm not wearing high heels and a gown or anything, but I'm definitely not wearing, you know, sweatpants or...
And Uggs.
I don't like that. Oh, God, don't get me started on that. No, absolutely not. I'm all for a nice... There's ways to dress really elegantly and classy on a flight without wearing sweats.
I think it also changes your whole experience, like, on the flight. Like, you can have, like, the most, like, crying babies. You can be surrounded by crying babies.
But
and,
you
like,
look cool.
Snoring people and, like, you know, like... Just like you can be in the aisle and get your knees bumped. Well, at least I do because I'm 7.5 feet tall.
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen to me.
But like, as long as you like feel good and you're like wearing a suit and like a lot of times, like if you're just cool to the people around you, like at the airport. And this is my trick, and we were talking about this last night actually. If you like look halfway decent and you're nice to everyone around you, and which you should, I think you should always do that.
Absolutely.
Really, anyway, in life, but.
Well, as next...
Get upgraded, maybe.
Well, you can. I mean, it's harder to get upgraded now. But, you know, when I have to say, and also you never know who you're going to get sit next to. I sat next to this gentleman. I don't know his name still, but it was 4 years ago, and he heard me talking on the phone about whiskey. And I was dressed up. I was going to some event in California, and when I still worked for a whiskey company as their spokesperson. And he heard me talking about setting up this event, and I was helping write slides for this presentation. And he said, you know, he was an entrepreneur, and he had, like, I remember him telling me, like, six houses and all these things. He's like, why do you work for someone else? You should just stop and write a book. And I thought, huh? He said, you're doing all this stuff. He's like, you sound like you could just go off and do your own thing. And he was super supportive and emailed me. I was like, you know, and his wife was sitting next to him, and I always think about that guy. And I think... Yeah, you know, like, I was dressed nice and professional, and he gave me the time of day and nice advice, and here I am with a book.
And it's a great-looking book.
Thank you. Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break, and let's talk about the book.
Okay, I'm excited about that.
We're just,
that.
Like, kind of getting to know each other right now, but when we get
airport
back, we're
going to... talk.
When we get back, we'll talk with Heather Greenmore about her book, Whiskey Distilled. Back in a moment.
The name of this song is Butterfield East by Mamarazzi. This is HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thank you.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels to lower barrel entry proof before heat-cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy today, and we are hanging out with Heather Green in the studio, author of Whiskey Distilled, and just all-around awesome person that I'm just so lucky to be hanging out in the studio with. We're having some Balvenie
Scotch. 15. We decided Scotch was the drink du jour.
Of course. It's a perfect day for it. You know, actually, this is the first show of the new year, and what did you drink on New Year's?
Well, after enjoying a bit of wine, the drink of choice, what was open that night? Oh, a Glenfiddich 18. That's nice. What we opened that night. Glenfiddich 18, which is a classic Speyside, which is a region of Scotland, single malt scotch. Single means one single distillery. Scotch is, of course, whiskey that comes from Scotland.
And if you want
to write on your bottle single malt scotch, you must be whiskey that comes from Scotland, made with 100% malted barley and coming from one single distillery. What's interesting is most people think the word single refers to single grain over in Scotland. It means single distillery. Mm-hmm. So, a little tidbit for your fans.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Do you prefer one style of whiskey over another one?
You know what? I don't. I feel it's sort of, I just sort of get the literal, you know, figuratively and literally get the temperature of the day or the environment. And, you know, when you and I had discussed out in the bar, like, what are we drinking? You first went with a rye and a bourbon, and I just felt like scotch. Sometimes in this particular environment with this really freezing cold, I have that thirst for scotch.
I think I really asked for rye first because I didn't think that they had, I didn't really know what the whiskey, the scotch right in, yeah. selection was at Roberta's.
That's good. Balvenie is a great brand. Yeah. Yeah. They have great brands here all along. So
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like I have a farm in Oklahoma, and so like I've grown up growing and farming corn and wheat. And to me, like whenever I drink like a bourbon or like typically bourbon, there's a certain connection to like something
the land or something that you
absolutely.
Feel you have an affinity for it. It's two things for you. You're American, and Americans are very well. Many Americans have a palate for bourbon. It's what they grew up with, and that's something I talk about in my book. You know, when people have this notion of what's the best whiskey out there or what tastes the best, we come to the whiskey drinking table, you know, with a whole host of cultural attitudes and things we're used to and what we grew up with that will influence how we taste and react to something that we put in our mouths. And so for me, I always think about that. There is no, when people ask what your favorite whiskey is or what is the best, right now people are talking about Japanese whiskey being the best whiskey in the world. Well, science says that there's just an incredible amount of subjectivity and in the human palate that the notion of a best whiskey is kind of lost when you just talk in terms of science and also culturally.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so
like
part of you is you grew up on a farm and you're American and, you know, something like scotch isn't something you grew up with, nor is the grain something that you're.
But I still love it.
Well, you can still love it. Yes, exactly.
But it's kind of like the, I guess the other side of that argument is like, you know, the things like an Italian Amaro, you know, or like Fernet or an Amaro, like where the palate isn't necessarily used to or adjusted to those types of flavors and aromatics. But I think we're like getting into that. I think there's like a lot really esoteric like Scotch whiskeys that have come out, especially like the Islay stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really smoky, peaty, mm-hmm. like salty, briny kind of like. People are really into that now. And it's great that they are.
They are. They've been into that in America. I think that these are whiskeys that come, as you mentioned, they come from an island called Islay. Some people mispronounce it and say Islay. It's actually Islay. It's spelled Islay, should you see it on a bottle. And the tradition in that island is to smoke and peat the barley. And people often ask me, what does that exactly mean? Well, peat is a partially dehydrated fuel source. And not very romantic name, but they partially dehydrated vegetation that you dig up and you dry and use as a fuel source. Mm-hmm. You can light it. It's flammable. And when you malt barley, you need to basically trick it into germination so that it sprouts and then you dry it. And the way they dry it in Islay is they light this peat on fire and it smokes into the barley. And that's how you get that aromatic. So Islay whiskeys are just so memorable and so pungent and sea-like and briny and smoky. People really remember it.
Would you call them occasional?
I do think that's an occasion. I think. I mean, for all whiskeys for me are occasional. You know, it's like a spice. It's a spice rack. You know, and I pull out depending on what I'm in the mood for, or eating or drinking, or is it before dinner or after dinner? These are questions. Is it breakfast? You know, I'm not going to have a smoky peaty whiskey for breakfast. You know, so
yeah. Well, of course, I mean, like, in Germany, they drink the Hefeweizen for breakfast, you know?
Oh, they do? I didn't know that.
Of course.
Okay, interesting. Well, and the interesting thing you talk about with palate, about the other spirits you're talking about is like, you know, is that there's probably some aromatics that people respond to within it. So, you know, wine and beer and whiskey and a lot of gins, you know, there's going to be, it's not just gin. It's like, there's a lot of aromatics that actually come out of that. And what that means, and I talk about this in my book, and I find it to be the most interesting, but it was the most fun part to write for me, was the exploration of what aroma is. And that's essentially, there's essentially a cluster of organic molecular compounds. It's a molecular compound. There are carbon and hydrogen and oxygen atoms that molecules that combine to create a specific smell. And when we smell a whiskey or a wine, we're actually inhaling these molecules. They attach to receptors right behind the bridge of our nose and send a little message to our brain that says something like, rose, or my farm,
yeah.
Or yeah, grandma's attic, you know, and these trigger memories. These are, you know, memory and smell are very closely linked. They are part, they're kind of
olfactory.
Housed in the,
it's strongest of senses, right?
Exactly. It's old, and it's the oldest part of our brain associated with the limbic system. And so that to me is really interesting. So when we taste something like gin or sherry or whatever, I mean, it's not just the profile of that particular beverage, but it's also the teeny elements within it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can't wait to crack this book open. I just got it, you know, right at the top of the show, and I'm really excited to get into it.
Thank you.
I love talking with people like you on the show because I know that you are absolutely just like full-hearted like into it, you know, like,
yeah,
just like
to write a book. You look, a lot of people when they say I want to write a book too, I think to myself, you don't know what you're getting into, because yeah. I mean, other I now feel, you know, when I talk to other, now I have such an appreciation of other writers. I mean, that's your life for 2 years. I mean, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're it's not about just a brain dump of information. It's how are you going to communicate that information?
Right.
How, what kind of language or tone you're going to be using. I mean, my first draft of this book was, can you swear? I'm not going to swear.
Yeah.
It was crap.
Yeah.
It was crap. It was shit. I mean, my first draft was, you know, very technical, very dry, I think. I got really excited and explaining everything. And then the editor at Penguin Random House, was Penguin at the time. And she's like, well, this is great. It's a great first draft. And I was heartbroken. And I had to rewrite that entire book for 2 months. Spoke another 2 months to rewrite it in a voice that is me. And now I understand what goes into bookmaking. And then there's just the whole editing process and fact checking, and it's a big job.
Dude, I can't wait to crack it open and just like spill whiskey all over it while I'm, you know, like one of my favorite, some of my favorite books, they say, there's one called, there's actually another Penguin book called Alcoholica Esoterica.
Oh, okay. I don't know that. And that sounds interesting.
I believe it's Penguin, but it's just like anecdotal, kind of like, just like a lot of cool, like old stories about booze. Mm. And the first thing it says is, the author says, you should always have a glass of whiskey while you're reading this. He's like, one, because you're reading about booze. Two, so you don't remember that much of it.
I'm like, funny. You know what? He's being a little self.
Yeah, I was like, I think he just wanted to have people reread it, you know? But I agree with the first part. I think it's really nice to, like, understand, like, you can't, like, read a book without having, like, a book about whiskey without having a glass of whiskey.
I think this book makes, I think it would be more fun. And I, in the book, I also talk about which whiskeys should you have in your hand and how to, and we were talking a little bit about subjectivity and diversity in palates, not just because of culture, but also our biologies as well, I get into, which we didn't talk about yet. But how to taste across different styles and learning how to appreciate them. So the first setup of this book is to try very different styles of whiskey. So you can people immediately say, I love bourbon. I'm a bourbon guy right away, or I'm a Scotch lady. I mean, it just happens pretty quickly when you have them side by side.
But how do you feel about that too? Like it's like, I mean, I think my theory is like, I always say to people, like, especially when I'm training new bartenders, I'm like, dude, just taste everything.
Someone
who's into food and beverage, just taste everything.
Yes,
you know?
I agree.
So like, I mean, like with bourbon, just like, let's just take bourbon for a second. Mm-hmm. It varies so much, you know, like rye heavy, wheat heavy, barley heavy, you know, like on the back end of like, of course it has to be predominantly corn, but but you have some that are like really rye heavy and really wheat heavy, you know, like Weller versus Four Roses, you know.
Right.
But then you have like, then like once you get past that, you're like, oh my God, the world of Scotch, you know, like, man, we have so many like Madeira, sherry casks, finish, like just so many, like the different islands, like Mull, Highland, Speyside, you know, like
Orkney has some great whiskeys. Yeah. Well, I think that's it's daunting for the new whiskey drinker, because I think the proliferation of whiskeys coming out on the market and all the information coming out online and all the magazine articles and the media is talking about it every single day. It's very daunting for the consumer. And I think that what I've found is that I laid out the map of the whiskey world. So whiskey is the umbrella term. You know, bourbon is a subset of a subset. I mean, right. So whiskey is the umbrella term. Then you've got American whiskeys, and then you have styles of American whiskeys, and bourbon is just one of those styles. And I think what's interesting to me, I've taught like thousands of classes at this point, and just a thousand, even more, you know, 10 times that for the amount of consumers over 10 years. And to see, I get a really good grasp of where the hangups are and where the misconceptions are and how we can change that. And one of the biggest things is that I think people don't understand the whole architecture of it. You know, that bourbon is a subset of the grandchild of whiskey and how that sits in the entire arena. And what's really fun, you know, a lot of branded classes, like there's a lot of these distilleries have their ambassadors, and I was an ambassador as well. And I used to teach whiskey, but it was really just one style. And I don't even get into those particular styles until more than halfway into my book, because really you want people to understand, how does bourbon sit against rye, sit against Scotch? What's the deal with Japanese whiskey? And then I think I call it a tasting in broad contrast. So you want to have a taste of all these different styles and really kind of get the big, major palate differences and then hone in on that bourbon, which I think is a nice thing for consumers to do, because they don't really get that opportunity often. Most of it is very branded.
Yeah. I think... Are you still like teaching classes?
Yeah, I still teach. I'm teaching one tonight, actually. So I teach at the Flatiron Room in Manhattan. usually on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9. I still do it. So we have different themes and styles, and yeah, it's really fun. And I learn a lot. This book is also a reflection of what I think, or not what I think, but what I know are the questions that most questions that people have that are afraid to ask, especially dudes. Right?
Dudes are scary.
Well, women are fun to have in class because they ask the questions that men are afraid to ask, but still don't really know.
And that's why, you know, and I noticed like about 7 years ago at the bar, and it was like one of the happiest days behind the bar ever that I've ever had, when one day it went from like vodka sodas to, and this is going to sound terrible, but like two girls came in and they like ordered, one of them ordered Laphroaig neat. And I was like, yeah, totally. And the other one ordered like Rittenhouse 23 with like one ice cube. And like, it blew my mind.
Hmm.
And I was like, all right, cool. It's like, yeah. And then the dudes that were standing around them were all like,
did they start mansplaining or
yeah,
were they
were like drinking vodka cranberries and shit. Okay. And I was like, oh my God, we finally reached a point where things are cool.
Oh, that's funny.
It was great. But I would love to come to one of your classes sometime. Like,
absolutely.
I mostly just so we can hang out again. And I would love to have you back on the show anytime you'd like to come in.
Well, of course. We can get in depth. We can do a bourbon show, a rye show, a scotch show.
It would be awesome. And
really
Jack would really like that, too. He really likes it when we
bring some bottles.
It's true. I like to drink.
He likes
bring
that.
Bring some bottles from different distilleries. Yeah.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Heather, thank you so much. The book is called Whiskey Distilled. It's out now. You can find it, I'm sure, everywhere.
Yes, and, you can.
it's going to be a great read. I already know. I haven't gotten a chance to crack it yet, but it's my next move. And thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Happy New Year. And thanks for being my first guest on
the show. Oh, I'm super honored.
For,
are you
2015.
Kidding? It's pretty cool.
I think we got a little bit left in there, so maybe we can clink in the New Year. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out heritageradionetwork.org for many shows like this. You can also find us on iTunes, and wishing all of you a safe and happy New Year. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.